So last week we talked about different types of encouragement, how to tell if a person has been encouraged, lack of encouragement in certain areas, and I think we were on seclusion when we left off because we had talked about people being isolated and with COVID and everything that happened. If a person's preoccupied, distant, or out of touch, they can be sending the message that others around them aren't important. The person who uses excuses in his or her absence by saying, "I don't get anything out of it," is saying more about themselves than the quality of the service. Mature Christians look forward to each assembly where encouragement is given and received by all who attend. I'm sure all of us had one time or another have heard someone say, I don't get anything out of this, or I'm not here, I didn't come because, well, I don't like so-and-so's preaching, and I don't get anything from that. And that's not the mindset we need to have, because us being in that pew is an encouragement to everybody else who's attending, the preacher who's preaching, the song leaders, all of that. And when we go into a service with that mindset, we're not going to come out with anything, right? I know there are a lot of people here that work. Josh works nights. He'll come, and he's got more energy than I think I ever do. And I found he doesn't drink a lot of coffee. I don't know about that. You know, coming in and seeing a group of people that are all here for the same purpose is just encouraging in and of itself. Especially if you've had a rough day, you've had a long day, you've had a hard day at work, or the kids, or anything like that. You can come in here and see these people, talk to your brethren, and it makes you feel better, let alone the Bible study that you get out of it. The next point I had was low self-esteem. And how can low self-esteem make it more difficult to encourage others?
Someone with low self-esteem might think that they have nothing to offer.
Yes. And if I don't feel good about myself, how do I know how to make you feel better about yourself? Right? I talked about having trouble taking a compliment. And I don't believe people are being disingenuous when they give it to me. I'm just like, oh, well, thanks, but you know, and I try to excuse it. But we can't make other people feel good if we don't feel good about ourselves. Why was Jesus such a great encourager?
Well, he definitely did not have a low self-esteem.
No.
And he knew he was bringing the word.
Right. He knew his purpose, right? There was never any question about it. We question, you know, what am I going to be when I grow up? What am I going to do? We have all these questions. He came here with a purpose in mind. He knew who he was. He knew what was going to happen, ultimately. But that is part of what made him so good at encouraging others, because there was no self-esteem issue there. When we feel good about ourselves, building others up is more important than promoting ourselves. If I feel good about myself, well, I don't need anybody else to tell me, you know, how, oh, you're really good. I appreciate it. Thank you. But I have that confidence. And I don't want to say pride, because pride is an issue. But having confidence is different than pride. And how, when you have that confidence, you can encourage other people because you don't need that self-reassurance.
You can take pride in your accomplishments. You just don't need to expand on it. You know, make it too much. But I think you can be proud. You know, I'm proud I'm an American.
Right. Yes, there are.
But I'm not going to denigrate anybody who's not an American.
Right.
You know?
There's a line, right? I can be proud that I accomplished this, but if I'm boastful about it,
right,
that's when we're kind of teetering on that line, right? The next one I have was lack of experience. The ability to encourage is a learned skill that takes practice. I liken it to anything else, right? If we want to be good at something, we have to practice it. We have to work at it, train, and improve our relationships with others. Another thing that I'm not good at, and you can ask quite a few ladies here in this church, is texting. I don't do it on purpose. I see it and I'm like, okay, I'm going to come back to that in a minute. And then I never do. I forget. And it's not me being facetious or mean. It's just, oh, I forgot. And then I'm like, oh, well, it's too late to text you back now, because that's embarrassing to say, oh, I forgot. So that's something that I continually try to get better at, because I never want someone to feel like I'm not interested in what they have to say to me.
Well, don't be embarrassed, because there's plenty of times I get to bed and I look back and I never send it.
At least I'm not the only one. Because it happens quite a bit. I'm like, oh, yeah. Sorry, I was doing this and I forgot and I just left it open.
I think we're all used to that, you know. They may or may not text me back.
Yeah, and phone calls. If I have your number saved, I see it, I'm like, okay. If I don't see that number, poor Miss Margaret called me to check on me one time, but it was a New York number, and I didn't have her saved in my phone. I'm like, that's spam. I'm not answering that. And she goes, why did you answer my call? I'm like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that was you. Let me save your number right now so it'll pop up.
So many texts today, you know, like when they text here at church, a lot of people are answering that, but it's just their phone number. So you don't know who they are. And so when I text somebody that hasn't received something from me before, I always tell them who I am, and then they'll know that number's mine.
Well, especially around election time, I don't know about y'all, but I'm getting those texts that, oh, we need your vote for so-and-so. And I'm like, okay, report, delete, block, let's move on from that. So we need to work and learn and train ourselves. The first time, sometimes I stick my foot in my mouth and I mean to say something endearing and I don't mean it the way it always comes out, or I think back and I'm like, oh, I hope they didn't take that the wrong way. Mark, do you think they took that the wrong way? No, Joanne, I'm sure they knew what you meant. And it comes with time, I guess, learning the right words to say. Or even how to say them sometimes. Another one I have is lack of commitment. Miss Elizabeth, do you want to read Romans 12, 10 through 13 for me?
Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence. Fervent in spirit. Serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope. Persevering in tribulation. Devoted to prayer. Contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality.
So that right there kind of gives us a list of things that we need to be and we need to do, right? One of them is devoted to prayer. Does that mean just praying before my meals or just praying at the end of the day? It's something that we need to continually do. We have to be devoted to something, committed to something, to actually make lasting changes. How does lack of commitment hinder the ability to encourage?
I was just going to say, we can't be lackadaisical without our commitment.
Being committed, sometimes when we want to encourage people, sometimes it's just built into it. But those that aren't used to it, to doing it, they have to really work at it. You know, look for ways to do it. And
some people are just born with that ability. It seems right. like it comes naturally to them. And then there are some of us that, just like anything else, right? You want to play baseball. There are some people that are just naturally gifted in that area. There are some people that have to work twice as hard to be that good. It's something that we need to be committed to. We have to keep working. If you say, oh, well, you know what? I want to lose 10 pounds. Is sitting down and eating 3 pieces of cake, is that going to help you? No. Or you say, okay, I'm going to go to the gym because I want to get better. I want to get healthier. Okay. You have to. Are you going to feel like doing that every day, every other day, whatever you decide you're going to do? No. I don't. Mark is very strict. He goes 3 days a week, unless work interferes with that. But he gets up at 5 o'clock. He goes to the gym. He has this. It's a very strict. He's committed to that. I hear the alarm and I turn over the other way because that is not what I'm committed to. Also, it's more and more instant gratification around us, right? I can order something on Amazon and I can have it here tonight in some cases. But I get upset if I have to wait 2 or 3 days for it, right? If I can't get it right when I want, or I go to the store and they don't have what I want. You mean I have to wait? We get spoiled in that way. But people who are committed to being encouragers, they're dependable people. They stick with relationships and obligations, and they're not going to, if you are friends and you have a disagreement, because nobody agrees 100% of the time, you have a disagreement, it's not, oh, well, I'm not friends with so-and-so anymore because they said something I didn't like or I didn't agree with. You're dedicated to fixing that and working through things. And I think sometimes commitment gets put on the back burner out in society because, oh, well, this didn't work. I can go find another one. Oh, my marriage didn't work. Well, I can go find another one. You know, it's so widely accepted that it's okay. And that's not how we should be. I also said that it's essential to Christianity. Ms. Sander, do you want to read Romans 15, 1 through 5?
We need you are strong, ought to bear with the scruples of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproach you fell on me. For whatever things were written before we were written for our learning, that we through the patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. Now may the God of patience and comfort grant you to be like-minded toward one another according to Christ Jesus.
So if Jesus is supposed to be our example, and we see the things that he did throughout his life, we see that he was being an encourager, he was encouraging others, he was disliked by a lot of people, that should be our example, right? We can read through scripture after scripture of people who were examples to us. And when we have those examples, that means that this isn't an option, right? It's not optional. This is something that we're supposed to be. We're told to do these things. It's a legitimate and essential function of Christianity. Plenty of people, and I should have prefaced this by saying in society, I guess, are ready to tear down others by ridiculing your hopes and dreams. I think of a little kid who says, oh, I want to be a doctor and an astronaut. Well, who am I to say, do you know the odds of you becoming an astronaut to a 4 or 5 year old? I'm not going to be the one to dash those dreams. They may change. But I don't want to ruin that for you, because if someone tells you you can't do something, some of us are hard-headed and they're like, oh, you said I can't do it? Well, I'm going to do it. Come on in, sir. We are on the part of the lesson about essential to Christianity. Sean, you have a lesson?
Shame.
So we were talking about it not being an option, that it is something that we're told to do. I have Matthew 22:39. Miss Bobby, you want to read that for me? Yes, I'm sorry, I was looking at 38. I'm like, how come this doesn't? Yes. And Miss Sally, you want to read 1 Thessalonians 4:18. Sorry.
Therefore, encourage one another with these words.
All right. And I'll do Galatians 6:10. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. So we have the command to love, to comfort, and to do good. That tells us that we are to encourage in an unending duty of dispensing hope. Does that mean that it's always going to work out for the best? Are we always going to be able to encourage that person?
No.
No. But does that mean we give up and we never do it again?
No.
No. People want to know they're valued and someone believes in them. And that's our goal by encouraging them. It's nice to know that someone believes in you and that someone thinks you can do it.
Joey.
Yes.
Encouragement. Mostly we've been talking about words, encouraging them with our words. But I have something written by Ovid, some philosopher years ago. A new idea is delicate. It can be killed by a sneer or a yawn. It can be stabbed to death by a quip and worried to death by a frown on the right man's brow. So there's so many different ways we can discourage, not just with our words, but our actions and the way our countenance is before them.
Yes, and sometimes it takes a whole lot less to discourage someone than it does to encourage them. Someone tells you, hey, do you want to teach a class? And, you know, I think this would be really good for you. And you're nervous about it, and so you go tell someone that you're close to, right? Hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. Well, that person has two choices. Yeah, you know what, I think you could do it and you would be good at it. Or they can say, oh, really? You're going to do that? And then that just totally diminishes any encouragement that they had to do it, right? So no matter what, you think, oh, well, even if I do this, I'm probably not going to do a good job now, and maybe I shouldn't, maybe I should just say no. But there are some of us that have trouble saying no. And sometimes no is an acceptable answer.
Well, when I think about the discouragement, like I think from what I read from COVID, I think of a parent. You know, a parent can look at you across the room and you can tell whether they're happy with you or they're discouraging you from continuing that behavior. So it's just,
yes,
you know.
And you moms here, I'm sure you all have that look. That because my mom had that one look.
Your dogs might know your voice.
Yeah, well, and more of Mark's voice. moms have that look. Like, are you really going to do that? You need to stop. And I knew what that, whichever look it was, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm not going to do that. So, yes, it can be very easy to discourage a child, I guess. Anytime I have a child come to me and they're like, oh, do you like my drawing? Like, this is, and there are sometimes I have no idea what it is, and I'm like, so I look at it, trying to, because I don't want to say, oh, that's a really nice elephant. Well, that's not an elephant, that's a turkey. Oh, okay, well, I just totally upset you, and I didn't mean to. I might ask questions about it to try to figure out what it is, and I always try to find one good thing in there, so I can honestly say, you know what, I really like how you did this, or that was really creative coloring the sky green and the grass blue, you know, hey, that's different. Because if me as an adult looked at them and been like, well, that's a terrible drawing, they could go away and never want to draw again, right? Just because of something that I said. And yes. And I always tell any kid that I teach, you know, if you ever become a famous artist, remember me, right? Remember. if you want to take care of me in my old age, I would appreciate that. So there are different situations that we can come up on that we can easily encourage or discourage. And sometimes we might need to assess the situation a little bit differently. Not all encouraging words is going to go for every instance, right? And we need to know the difference. I think we'll get into the next lesson about sometimes just being there is enough. But I don't want to spoil next week. So the last part of this lesson is 10 reminders for encouragers. And I have some Bible verses for everyone. If you found other ones that fit in, please let me know. But remember to encourage others the way you want to be encouraged in their situation. Aurora, you want to read Matthew 7:12 for me? Yes, ma'am.
In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want to them to treat you, for this is the law of the prophets.
Very good. Has your mom ever said anything like that to you? Yeah. Some form of it, right? Ask the question, why is Matthew 7:12 the golden rule of all encouragers?
It makes you think about how you might need things later and if you want to be helped. Like, do I want to be helped when I'm old and in their age, when I'm in their situation?
You hope that there's someone like you that would come along and help you, right? We want to treat others the way we want to be treated. No one wants to be treated poorly, right?
So the golden rule really applies to everything when it comes to loving your brother. I mean, when it comes to this second rule, the second greatest commandment, I mean, this is what should
And we need to remember that we're not doing this for someone to give us something back, right? Our intentions need to be, I think, Brandon said this maybe Sunday night, Sunday morning, something about when you're a Christian and like it is the essence of who you are, you do things not because it's a checklist item. Like, oh, gotta be nice to so-and-so, I have to go and do this. It's not a checklist. It's, you're doing it almost without, you're not thinking about it because that is who you are. You're not doing it thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm going to do this for them and then they'll owe me one. That shouldn't be our intention when we're encouraging, when we're helping, anything like that. It should be like, I have this ability to help you. You need help. Let me do it. Sometimes it's really hard when people aren't nice to you, kind to you, to still be that person that wants to encourage them or do for them. I'm sure, Aurora, it's hard when your brother's not nice to you to be nice. Yeah.
I know how to solve that problem on my own.
I had a little brother, and my mom always, the golden rule, Joanne, remember. And, well, yeah, but he pulled my hair. I want to pull his hair back. Remember that people are inclined to treat you the way that you treat them. I have Luke 6:38. Melissa, you want to read that?
Give, and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return.
So what can we take away from that verse?
When we encourage others, they're more likely to turn around and encourage us. And we always need to be on the lookout for people that need to be encouraged.
Right. And we never know who we're helping, right? You never know who that person might turn out to be or become. And they may remember that nice thing that you did. And it might, they might not return it back to you, but they might return it to someone else. And...
Joanne?
Yes, ma'am.
Also, it may not just be back to us. They can learn by example, and they will encourage not just us, but other people too.
Right. Sometimes I think about when you talk with some people out in the world, and well, all Christians are Bible thumpers, or all Christians are hypocrites, and they throw that blanket over everybody, right? And I try to think, well, how many people have you run into that have been that way to give you that opinion, right? Just like me saying everybody out in the world is bad. That's not true. Just because I had some bad interactions with people, that's not true. But I want to be that one person that says I'm a Christian and they can see my actions. And maybe that might change their opinion. Maybe that might even afford me the opportunity to be like, hey, you know, do you want to come to services? Do you want to, like, see what it, at least come see what it's about. See, you know, I want you to see the good in people, not this assumption that you've given for everybody. And that's something that I try to remember. Remember that your time, talent, and treasures are heavenly trusts for encouraging others. Miss Elizabeth, you want to read Philippians 1, 20 through 25?
According to my earnest expectations and hope, that I will not be put to shame in anything, but that with all boldness, Christ will even now, as always, be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I am to live in the flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose. But I am hard-pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and be with Christ, for that is very much better. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith.
Okay. And who wrote this?
Paul.
Paul. And where was he doing this? Right. Was he having a good, fun time down here, living it up? No. And he knew what awaited him. But he... let's see. Oh, I lost my place. Remain and continue with you all for your progress. He was doing this. He was wanting to remain on earth for other people, not for himself, because he knew what he had waiting for him. He wanted other people to have that same reward, right? We can look at that as being very selfless, because I don't know how I would feel if I was in that same situation. I would like to think that, yes, if I was helping other people and doing a service to other people, without a doubt, I could be like, yes. But I don't know. I thank God that I'm not in that situation, and I hope and pray never to be. But when you think about where he was, it has a bigger impact to me, because I don't think it was very pleasant for him at all. Number four, remember, faithfulness to God is our top priority, then our neighbors. Ms. Sandra, you want to read Mark 12, 29 to 31? And this could tie back into our reminder number one. This also would have been a decent verse to put in for low self-esteem, right? If I don't love myself, how can I love someone else and give them what I'm commanded to give of them if I don't take enough care of myself? But at the end of the day, God is our top priority, right? If no matter how much you're trying to encourage someone, do they have the ability to drag you down with them?
Yes.
They do. And do we always notice it right off the bat? No. Sometimes we can be dragged down there, and we can be down there for a little bit before maybe someone else comes and is being encouraging to us and pointing out something that you're finally able to take a step back and go, oh, you know what? I can't help this person. I've been trying. But now this is leading me away from God. Like, I'm doing things that God would not be happy of. And that is my first priority. And in that instance, is it okay to just walk away from that person? Yes. Who was it said to dust off your feet and move on? And that's not something that's pleasant to think about, because we want to help. I'm sure most of us want to help everybody. If you're having a bad day, if you're feeling down, I want to make you feel better. I don't want to see anybody upset or hurt. But there are times that we've done all we can. And that's when you bow your head, pray, and that's the best that you can do in that situation, because God should be number one in our lives.
And that might be that one step that opens their eyes.
It may. It very well may. They could be like, oh, okay, you know? And that's the best outcome, right? Sometimes it can have the opposite effect, but that's the best outcome. That would make that situation much, like, worthwhile, right? If you're bringing another person back onto that path. The same goes for our peers. Aurora, I'm thinking of you right now. You have a group of friends all doing something that you know you shouldn't do, but they really want you to go do it, and you really want to be friends with them. That's a hard choice to make, right?
It is.
It is. And do we always make the right choice?
No. We're humans. We make mistakes.
We do. Let's see, what number was I on? Am I on number 5? Yes. Remember that every act of encouragement is an act of love for God. Let's see. We'll look at this one and then we'll skim the rest. Miss Bobby, you want to read 1 John chapter 4, 20 and 21 for me?
For if someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For the one who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also.
Right. And is brother here just talking about our brothers and sisters here in the congregation? Is it talking about everybody? Yeah? Are we going to... Is it really hard to love everybody?
It says love your enemies and love others.
It does. It does. If you recited that verse for me, I would have been real impressed, because I was trying to think of it. We are. And that is something that can be very hard for us. But when we show love to another person... that is God's creation, we're showing love to God, right? As you did to the least of these, you did to me. And that's what I'm not good with coming up. I may think of them, but I can't tell you where they are.
It's Matthew 20.
Is it?
Verse 25. Somewhere right there.
I'm going to write that down. I'm going to look that up later. But we see people every day, and it's easy to get upset with people and all of this. And it's easy for me to say, if I lived back then and I saw Jesus and I saw Jesus' miracles, like, how would you not believe him if you saw these things that he was doing? But these people saw all of these things, and they still didn't believe. That wasn't enough for them. So if he came back today and people saw, I'd like to think that everybody would be in awe and amazed. But that's not the case. And I won't get that opportunity while I'm still here living on earth. But when I get upset or I say hate, I try not to use the word hate very much, unless it comes to a food or something. I hate that. I try not to use the word hate, because if I can hate something God created, what is that saying about my commitment to God and what he's done? Number 6. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to mention, one thing I get out of these verses is John said, he starts with, if we love God. So, of course, everybody here loves God, I know. But if we love God, this is what we're going to do.
Yes. Yes. And that comes back to that just being ingrained in us, right? Like, it's not a checklist. It's something that is part of us. If we truly love God and we're trying to do his will, then this should be a part of it. It should come with that. It may take practice. It may take work. But it should come with that. Number six, remember that every act of encouragement is an act of love for Christ. Melissa, did you have your hand up or did you just...
No.
Okay. Miss Sally, you want to read Matthew 25:40 for me?
The king will answer them, "Truly, I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me."
Well, there's my verse, if I would have just waited. That was the one I was looking for. And I like to think back to when we're helping and we're encouraging someone, we don't know. If that's a stranger to us, we don't know who we're helping. Or whose life we've made an impact on and how that is going to affect everything else. Remember that one day you must account for every relationship God has placed in your care.
Yes. Going back to the one we just did,
yes.
If you read the rest, it's what you referred to about a while ago in Matthew 25:41, you know, where Christ is saying if you fed them, if mm-hmm. you're hungry, you gave them something to drink, if you clothed them, just things like that. So just bringing that to mind.
Yes. Sick in prison and you did not visit me. Just that shows us opportunities that we have to help people, right? That gives us a list of opportunities.
Because we're doing it for others, we're doing it for Christ.
Right. Yes. What does it mean that Christians are stewards of their relationships?
Been given a responsibility and a care that we are supposed to. I mean, it's a command, like you pointed out, and we will be judged based off of how we conduct ourselves with the people in our lives,
right?
And the way that we treat them, and then the way that we encourage, the way that we meet their needs.
Right, and that's for everybody, you know, mothers to children, fathers to children, husbands to wives, deacons, elders, preachers, teachers. You know, can the verse about teachers being responsible for what they teach, that should make all of us sit back and think a little bit before we teach. You know, I'm not going to say I'm never going to misspeak or I'm never going to, you know, say something that maybe years from now I will change my mind on. But I want to make sure that what I present and what I talk about are things that I truly wholeheartedly believe in and believe to be true. And if someone came to me and said, "Listen, I think you took that verse out of context," or I think, you know, maybe look at this, I need to remember that I need to be open to recognizing my mistakes, because I'm going to have to give answers for that. And I never want to be the reason that I've led someone down the wrong road in their beliefs, in their walk with Christ, because that would be detrimental to both of us. And that's, you know, we have examples all throughout about how parents should be with children, how husbands should be with wives, how we should be with one another. And those are things that we need to take seriously and to take into account. And I am 5 minutes over my time, so we'll stop.